Yes. The most important thing about me is that my husband David and his friend Ben are the ones who sponsor the Challenge Fund on Thursday Ooh. Night. So 10 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
10 years ago, they were the guys who made Challenge on Thursday night, and they said, we want to make sure that in perpetuity, Yeshivat Eretz HaTzvi has Challenge on Thursday nights. So that is the most important thing about me. But aside from that, I teach Torah. Thank you so much to everyone here, Michael, for organizing, Ruth Berman, and all the other organizers of this day. It is, again, not obvious that a yeshiva would say, let's take a day and talk about women in Judaism, and let's make sure that the people talking about women in Judaism are, in fact, women in Judaism. So it's really not an obvious thing, and it's a really special yeshiva that you guys are spending the year in. Theoretically, I have an hour to talk about women and mitzvot. It's a very, very specific topic that obviously I could cover in an hour, and you know, we'll completely run out of things to talk about. I'm supposed to theoretically stick to the halacha and, you know, not focus on the sociology. You have other people to talk about that. You have that a little bit this morning, you'll have a panel later. But it is impossible to talk about women and mitzvot without thinking about what it means to be a woman learning halachic texts that were written by men, for men mostly. And so that's really always where it starts. And that's where I want to start this conversation and then basically take us through a bunch of test cases to see what it means to be a woman keeping mitzvot. Now, the answer might be it's the exact same thing as a man keeping mitzvot, but we haven't necessarily thought about that. So we need to figure out what does that mean. And I started with this idea of the halachic man that Rav Soloveitchik is famous for describing, this ideal of the halachic man. And the first quote, you guys all saw most of these Makorot, right? I threw a lot at you guys. So in the first source, in describing Adam and Eve, Rav Soloveitchik says, there's no doubt that in the eyes of the halacha, man and woman enjoy an equal status and have the same worth as far as their humanitas is concerned. Men, women, same thing, Tzelem Elokim, created humanity, etc., all the same. Then in his famous book, Halachic Man, Rav Soloveitchik describes the way the halachic man looks at the world. Someone who lives in the world of halacha, his classic description of the halachic man relates to nature. How does halachic man look at sunrise? Not as, oh, it's so beautiful when the sun comes up. Not as, oh, it's so early, why am I awake? No, dawn and sunrise obligate him to fulfill those commandments that are performed during the day. The recitation of the morning Shema, Tzitzit, Tefillin, the morning prayer, Etrog, Shofar, Hallel, and the like. The halachic man looks at sunrise as a time that tells him he's obligated in a whole bunch of mitzvot. And now, when a woman reads this text and she says, oh yeah, sunrise, that's when many mitzvot of the day start. And then she looks at the list. She says, you know, I'm actually only chayav in some of the mitzvot that are on this list, right? And the classic example of halachic man has a different perspective, right? Because when you go on Ma'izmanim and it says earliest time for talis and tefillin, right? That's one of the things on the list that I never check. Meaning when I'm going on an early flight, right? I never have to check, do I have to put on my talis and tefillin before I leave? Can I do that before I leave to the airport, for example? Right? That's a thing that comes up. And the halachic woman, that's not a question that she has. She has many other questions that might be uniquely female. But the ones that Rav Soloveitchik mentions here, some of them don't apply to her. And so when reading these texts, you see on the one hand, Rav Soloveitchik assumes men, women, same. On the other hand, his examples are examples that might have differences among them. Now, I asked you guys, what color is a Band-Aid? Okay, I know that's a ridiculous question. What color is a Band-Aid? Skin color.
Green.
What?
What color is a Band-Aid? A Band-Aid is skin color. Whose skin color is a Band-Aid? Whose skin color is a Band-Aid?
White
people. Okay? Caucasian skin colors. Band-Aids are beige, right? Has anybody ever thought about that before? The skin of a Band-Aid assumes that the person wearing the Band-Aid is a white person, right? Now, that's not a bad thing. That's just how it started. But most white people never notice when they put on a Band-Aid, oh, cool, it matches my skin. That's just what it is, right? That's the instinct. But if you're a person with a different color skin, when you put on the Band-Aid, you notice it's a little bit weird because I'm putting on a Band-Aid of somebody else's skin color, right? That's the kind of thing that happens if you're a woman reading halachic man, right? You notice that the band-aid is the wrong skin color. It's not necessarily offensive, but you notice it in a way that a man doesn't. In the Magen Avraham, this is just one short quote from the Magen Avraham where he says, source number 3, Dekol HaTorah Namra Bilshon Zachar, V'afil Hachi Isha Bechlal. The Magen Avraham says, yeah, the Torah always talks about men, but we assume it always includes women. Okay, and the Magen Avraham's like, that's fine, that's just how language works. And again, Hebrew is a gendered language, and we're not saying we all need to be offended by any of this. But the Magen Avraham says, it always says man includes woman. I included this quote that I often think about from this feminist activist, where she says, feminism is the radical notion that women are people. I don't want to get into a whole separate discussion of like what feminism is, but the reason that I brought all of these sources to start the conversation is to highlight the nuance that's really, really easy to miss if when you read a source, it is always talking about you. And if you are a woman and you read a source, every time it says, ha'ish chayav, so you have to do what the Magen Avraham says and says, oh, it's talking about a man, but it also means a woman. And that's fine. In most cases, that's true. But if you're a woman, you have to translate that every single time. And you start to notice it. And you start to ask, is this true in every single case? And that is really where we need to ask our big question. Is this always true? Are the exceptions larger than the norm? Meaning, are halachic man and halachic woman two totally different kinds of people? Or are they really basically the same with a couple of exceptions? And people often talk about, oh, women, they're putter from so many mitzvot. There's so many mitzvot that women don't have to do, right? What category of mitzvot are women patur from that everybody knows about? Mitzvah aseisha hazman grama. I don't know if you guys took my little quiz. How many mitzvot aseisha hazman grama are there? How many mitzvot are there in the Torah? Easy one. 6 to 13. How many mitzvot aseisha hazman grama are there? 13. Some people list 14. My list has 13. Okay. How many of them are women patur from?
8.
And how many are women actually chayav in?
5
doraitas plus 3 drabanans. Okay, so it's kind of interesting because everyone talks about this huge women, they're true from mitzvah, seisha, hazman, grama. Like, this is the hugest category of mitzvot. And then when you start counting them, it's actually not that big. Now, to be fair, there are 613 mitzvot that we practice now. A huge number apply only to the Beit HaMikdash and Kohanim, etc., etc. But it's important to just pause for a second and say, okay, when we talk about this huge category of mitzvot that women are patur from, it's not that many. So why does it feel so big? Yes?
They're the most public in the sense that, not public, like general public, as in shul, for example, most noticeable.
Okay, so many of them are public mitzvot. Now, I'm just going to say this right now. I'm not going to talk about issues relating to tefillah today. Because all the other issues that I brought, I could convince myself that I could talk about them in just like 4 sources on the topic. I can't talk about the issues of women and tefillah in just a few sources. You're going to have a different shiur on that. Short version, women are chayavot in tefillah. Long version, different obligations with regard to tefillah b'tzibor, which leads to women being excluded from public davening in most cases, and that feels huge. Why else do mitzvot aseh shazman grama feel so big? Yes?
Just occurrence, how often they show up.
Okay, when do they show up? Many of them are
daily.
Some are daily, right? Shema, tzitzis, tefillin, right? Those are daily. And then you have a bunch of holiday things. Right? The holiday ones also, they're pretty noticeable. I mean, Sukkot only happens once a year. We have 2 mitzvot aseh shazman grama of Sukkah and Lulav, right? And if your obligations with regards to this huge holiday are different, so that also feels kind of like a big deal. Any other thoughts on why this feels so huge? Yes?
Also, there are more like structural implications of like some of like those categories. Like, let's say davening, like that's why like you actually need to build a baby giraffe, like the daven. So that's why when you have like questions like the feet, sounds like if women aren't obligated to daven, like why do we need to like make it, like what it's not as much of a focus like building kind of a section.
Communities build structures based on behaviors that people do, and people usually do behaviors that they're obligated in. Now again, women are chayavot in tefillah, separate shear for another day. Okay, But, yes, as a community, we build out based on the way that people normally practice. And if women don't do certain things that they're too out from, then our communities don't focus on those behaviors. Another reason that this feels so huge, I'll take you in a second, is just also, by the way, the Mishnah in source number 4 divides mitzvot into 4 categories. All 613 mitzvot get divided into 4 categories, one of which is mitzvot aseh shehazman grama, which again is only 13 or 14 mitzvot out of the 613, but the Mishnah categorizes it. Again, it's not meant to be mathematical, it's meant to be sort of paradigmatic, but it's viewed as a category that deserves to be debated on its own, so it feels kind of big. Someone else wants to share something?
I was going to say, as opposed to just like a physical structure, it's not, because it's specifically a time, it's part of your daily structure, how you live. So.
Yes. There's also the question of why do we even have mitzvot aseh shehazman grama? Because God decided that there were actions that we should perform at prescribed times. And some of those are things that women are not obligated to do. Though again, about half of them are things that women are in fact obligated to do. We're not going to go through every single one of how this happens, but that's what I want to look at now. Source number 4 is the Mishnah in Kiddushin that divides mitzvot into basically 4 categories. Again, it's really not a very good division because it's mitzvot that parents do for children, that children do for parents, mitzvot aseh, shazman grama and shelo azman grama, mitzvot lo taseh, shazman grama, mitzvot aseh, shelo azman grama. Okay, so it breaks down into these categories, but it's not really a very useful mathematical division in any sense. It just tells us that out of these 3 main categories, women are patur, out of these 4 main categories, sorry, women are chayavo in 3, and patur from 1, okay? Anything that you're not allowed to do, that you is everybody, right? Meaning, what we're trying to figure out is when we talk about chiyuvim, who are we talking to? And when we're talking about mitzvot lo taseh, that is everybody, including me. Yes?
Isn't it interesting that women are not obligated in 2 categories?
Okay. Sorry. The mitzvot that a father has to do for his children, right, mothers are not obligated in. That one really isn't, that's like an introduction to the 4 categories. I mean, really the Mishnah talks about 6 categories. The father-child one is really just the way the Mishnah gets into its later division. You're totally right. There is a very interesting conversation to be had about why obligations that parents have to children specifically fall on fathers. The end of the first paragraph of Kiddushin is really, really interesting. Learn it. Okay. Source number 5. Source number 5 is where the Gemara tries to figure out if this Mishnah is right. Now, we don't usually say that. Right? We don't usually say, is the Mishnah right? The Mishnah's right. It's the Mishnah. But the Gemara says, v'klalahu, is this really a rule that women are p'turot from all mitzvot aseh shehazman grama? Hare matzah simcha hakel de mitzvot aseh shehazman grama v'nashim chayavot. Aren't women chayav in simcha on Yom Tov and hakel every 7 years coming to the Beit HaMikdash? And matzah on Pesach, that's a big one. And women are chayav in those. V'tuv hare talmud Torah peri v'rivyu pidyon ha-ben de lav mitzvot aseh shehazman grama hu v'nashim p'turot. And here are 3 mitzvot that are not hazman grama, and women are pater from those. So is this division, is this rule really a good rule? Am Rabbi Yochanan, en l'midin min ha-klalot, v'afilu b'makom sh'ne'amar b'chutz. What does Rabbi Yochanan say? Yeah, sometimes we say it's a rule, but we don't extend it any farther than the list that we actually have. Even when it says this is an exclusive list, it's not always an exclusive list. We follow the halachot as we know them. Now, there's a huge more amount to be said about this, about mitzvah aseh shehazman grama and why women are p'turot from it. For people who are interested in that, this is a good time for me to plug that I actually work for a website called drechaha.org, which you can also find at womenandmitzvot.org, literally a whole website dedicated to women and mitzvot. And there's a whole long article there on all of the potential rationalizations and explanations that have been given for this p'tur of women from mitzvah aseh shehazman grama. People are interested in that. There's a lot to be said about it. But I don't want to talk about the reasons why. I want to talk about the what. Okay, because what we're trying to do here is figure out what is the what of women and mitzvot. What is the existence of this woman who keeps mitzvot in the world when she interacts with the rest of the world? Who is she? Okay? Any questions so far? So what we have to do is look at a couple of test cases. Okay? What we're going to do is ask, what does this case teach us about this halachic woman and her relation to mitzvot? And then, does that feel kind of like what yours is? Or is it creating this whole different being of this woman? So, test case number one, Kiddush. Are women chayavot in Kiddush?
Yes.
Yes. Did everybody know that? I hope everybody did, but not everybody does. And can they be motzi a man lechachila? That's a good question.
Yes.
Yes and no.
So why don't we see this ever? Pretty much ever. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Let's start from the beginning. Because everyone here seems to know women are chayavot in Kiddush, that's great, but there was a real reason to think maybe they wouldn't be. Why? It's a mitzvah asei shazman grama. So, source number six. Amar of Adabar Abba, Nashim Chayavot beKiddush Hayom Dvar Torah. Women are chayav in making Kiddush. Amai, why? Mitzvah asei shazman grama, yivachol mitzvah asei shazman grama, Nashim Pturo, they should be plutzer, it's mitzvah asei shazman grama. Ella Amar Rava. Rava teaches, and this is a very famous limud in mitzvah asei shazman grama. Amar Kra, Zachor, Shamor. We learn about Shabbos, Zachor and Shamor. Zachor teaches us which mitzvot of Shabbos? Zachor teaches, no, come on guys. Zachor teaches the ases, Shamor teaches the lotases. Zachor, remember, with positive things, Shamor, guard, with the negative things. Kol sheyeshno b'shmira, yeshno b'sfira. Anybody who has the lotases of Shabbos has the ases of Shabbos. V'hane nashe, and these women... Since they have the lotases of Shabbos, they have the ases of Shabbos as well. Because as we said, there are no isurim that men have that women don't have, except for actually the two mentioned in the Mishnah, which we didn't go into, which involve cutting off your payas. I could do that if I wanted to. Doesn't come up very often in my life. Women can't do malacha on Shabbos. Therefore, they have to do Kiddush on Shabbos. Because Shabbos is a package deal. This same limud, by the way, is also where we get the chiyuv of women in matzah on Pesach. Because they can't have chametz and matzah go together. If you can't have chametz, you also have a chiyuv in matzah, because certain mitzvot are package deals. Doesn't make sense to have Shabbos that doesn't have any mitzvot asay associated with it. So women are chayav in Kiddush in the exact same way that men are chayav in Kiddush. Meaning on a doraita level. And that's why the Shulchan Aruch says, as explicitly as you could possibly see, Nashim chayavot b'kiddush, afal pishu mitzvah asei shazman grama. Women chayav, even though, mishum de'it kish zachor l'shamor, v'hanei nashe hol v'inu b'shmir, inu b'schir, u'motzi'ot et ha'anashim ho'il v'chayavot min ha'torah kimotam. The Shulchan Aruch could not be any more clear that the chiyuv of women in Kiddush is the exact same chiyuv as men have in Kiddush, and therefore, women could be motzi men in Kiddush hayom. And yet... we do not see this. Yes?
Why don't we see this? Like...
why don't we see this? So, let's look at a couple of rationalizations. What we have to look at is, are there halachic reasons that this should not be done? And there are some sources that say there are reasons that this should not be done. Let's look at a few. What this is going to bring up is there's always overlap between this sugya and other sugyas. One of the sugyas that, that this has in mind is... other types of people being motzi, other questions where we ask whether women can be motzi men. We're going to see another category that comes up, and then we'll see how they play together. Source number 8, by the way, is just a really nice line in the Aruch HaShulchan, where he says the double meravava thought maybe women couldn't be motzi men in mitzvot in general, because the whole concept of people being motzi each other in mitzvot is like a very weird concept, and it comes from this idea of arevut, that Jews are all responsible for each other's mitzvah participation. And there was one shita that says maybe women and men don't do that for each other. Maybe women are not chayav for men's mitzvah participation. The Aruch HaShulchan said, V'davar tamua. That's the end of source number 8. He says, I can't understand why anybody would say that the concept of being motzi doesn't apply to women. As long as the chiyuv is the same, we're going to be able to be motzi. So the question is, Kiddush. Source number 9, the Mishnah Berurah. This is probably the most influential source in the sort of modern-day practice. Actually, maybe not. The Mishnah Berurah says as follows: U'motziyot et ha'anashim v'chein hiskimu hataz magin Avraham v'hagrav. I think that's the Shagat Aryeh. U'mikol makom yesh lachmir lachachila shelo totzi isha anashim she'enam mibnei beita d'zila milta. The Mishnah Berurah says women should not be motzi which kind of men in Kiddush?
Non-family
members. Why? D'zila milta. I translated that as undignified. You could quibble with the translation. We'll stick with it for now. The Mishnah Berurah says that there's a problem with women being motzi men in Kiddush if they are not in her family. Is this a halachic problem? It's not formulated in technical halachic language. Meaning, if we're talking about lechachila, he says, yesh lahachmir lechachila. And when you see someone say, yesh lahachmir lechachila, what it means is if you already did it, you're fine. But this is how we should generally practice. The Mishnah Berurah says women shouldn't make kiddush for non-family members. Okay? And this idea of non-family members is something that we see in slightly different words in other sources as well. If you look at source number 10, for example, this is the Aruch HaShulchan again. Remember, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Mishnah Berurah, lived approximately at the same time. And it's very interesting sometimes when you see a machloket between them to see the different perspectives that they're bringing because they're approximate contemporaries. The Aruch HaShulchan in source number 10 says, V'yish rotzim lomar she'inan motziot anashim. There are those who wanted to say that women can't be motzi men in Kiddush, kimo b'megillah, l'kaman siman tafresh peteh. Like there are those who say women can't be motzi men in Megillah. Now, can women be motzi men in Megillah? That's a shir to have before Purim. But there are those who hold the shita that women cannot read the Megillah for men. It's a pretty widespread shita. The Aruch HaShulchan says, some people said, same for Kiddush, women can't make Kiddush for men. It says, v'eino ikar. Says, but that comparison doesn't hold water. Dibisham kevan dibirabin hu zila milta kumoshikatua toso besuka. There, with regards to Megillah, the Aruch HaShulchan says you can make the claim that there's something undignified about women reading Megillah for men. And he quotes a toso and sukkah, which I was going to bring, but I'm not going to bring. Masha ain came bekiddush, but kiddush is not birabin. The Aruch HaShulchan says the only problem of zila milta is if it's birabim, but that's not the case with kiddush. Kiddush is not some sort of public thing, and therefore there is no problem with women being motzi men. He uses the same language of zila milta, which he's concerned about, but the Mishnah Berurah is concerned about zila milta with non-family members. The Aruch HaShulchan is concerned with zila milta only in large public gatherings. What does this teach us about zila milta? Yes.
Sure. So then, I guess the practical question on that is what kiddush and shul, for example.
Oh. So sometimes you do have kiddush that's birabim. So what would the Aruch HaShulchan say? You'd say maybe if we think that zila milta is a problem, then that would be a problem as well. So what we see here is zila milta is a serious concern that both the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan say is something we need to be thinking about, but they put it into practice in slightly different contexts. Yes?
Where did the concept of zila milta come from?
Where did it come from? So we see this concept in terms of women being motzi men in things and using this language of zila milta all the way back to the very, very early Rishonim. I don't think that the phrase itself comes up in earlier cases, although there is a Gemara that talks about a potential problem. I'll throw this one out. It has to do with benching. I'll throw it out. You'll tell me if you think that it's related to your question. There is a Gemara that says that it would be, it's really undignified for a man if his wife benches on his behalf. The implication there being, because the implication is that he doesn't know how to bench and his wife has to bench for him. Starting from that Gemara, we see other sources that talk about a problem with women being motzi men in certain contexts where it would be, again, undignified because it says something bad about the other people around them. Okay, we see this in a couple of different contexts where the thought was, if a woman does it, it must mean that the men there don't know how to do it, and that's not a good thing. Okay, we see this also coming up again. As I said, we're not talking about tefillah, we're not talking about women reading from the Torah. All of these things are very, very interesting, but require a full different shir to talk about. But these questions of when women do something in public, does that say something bad about the men there? Well, for a very, very long time, it definitely did. Because for a very long time, in your traditional society, if a woman was doing something in public, it must be because there were no men available to do that thing. And if there were no men available to perform that mitzvah, then that is saying something problematic about those men and about the kiyum mitzvah of the men in that community. So we already see that apply in some, like, sort of very specific cases, but the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan are both using this language of zila milta to apply to different types of contexts that they think are problematic. Yes?
So, I'm going to mention something. There's a minhag, one that even like that my family works with, which is, for instance, when making kiddush Friday night, like, it usually applies in context of males, like, all of them say kiddush, those who can. So should the minhag either, is it supposed to, or just isn't, or evolve to involve women as well, to do so as well?
So the question of more than one person making kiddush on Friday night is actually a really interesting one that involves a question of like chinuch of children, meaning teaching children to do mitzvot from a young age. And then there's actually a really interesting question of, is it better for one person to say kiddush on everybody's behalf, or is it better for everybody to do it on their own? There's a lot of people who, even if at home on Friday night only one person makes kiddush on everyone's behalf, there's one night or two nights in chutz la'aretz where everyone does it on their own. What night is that? Does anybody have this minhag? Yes, that the night of the Seder, there are a lot of people who every single person says kiddush on their own because of the specialness of the mitzvah of Dalet Kosov. Why am I throwing all this out there? Because most of this is minhag. That, or not minhag in the sense of like, oh, my family has this cute minhag. Most of this is minhag in terms of how practice got developed. Meaning, everyone's yotze, right? One person makes kiddush, you're yotze kiddush, right? There's no downside in terms of the kiyum ha-mitzvah here. The question is, what are our options for performing this mitzvah? So the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah both think that there are contexts in which it's inappropriate for a woman to say kiddush on behalf of other men. Neither of them mentioned women saying kiddush on behalf of other women. It was obvious that that was obligatory, right? And even the Mishnah Berurah doesn't say that there's a problem with a woman saying kiddush on behalf of the men in her family, although it seems to have been highly discouraged. There's a very interesting quote. Michael Broyd has this very interesting footnote in which he quotes Rav Soloveitchik as saying that he thought it was totally fine for a woman to say kiddush for even in public for a large group of people, because he thought that the zila milta of the rabbim that the Aruch HaShulchan was talking about is when a mitzvah is a mitzvah that requires rabbim or is ideally practiced barabim, and he thought that kiddush was actually an individual mitzvah that just sometimes a lot of people do together. What's the point of this? The point is that it's very clear that lahalacha, there's no problem with a woman saying kiddush for men, and yet all of the later achronim have various hesitations in various contexts, because it's very clear that there are always factors at play that are not the pure halachic factor, and we should take those things into consideration. But that doesn't mean that one of them is the be-all and end-all, meaning the fact that the end of Soloveitchik sort of goes along with, meaning we had asked in the Aruch HaShulchan, right, if there was a big kiddush, would the Aruch HaShulchan say, you can't do it? And I had said, yeah, I think the Aruch HaShulchan would say, it's like Megillah, and he thought that was a problem, so don't do it. But the Rav said, I analyzed the situation, I actually think that it's not a problem. Okay? Because there's actually no question about the essence of the halacha. The question is only about putting it into practice. And in contexts where nobody thinks that there's zila milta involved, and I actually think that that is the vast majority of contexts that modern Orthodox young adults find themselves in, aside from your family context, meaning I think that most shared Shabbos meals, most people don't find there to be a zila milta involved. But if somebody did, that is something that we should take into account. Okay? And so that's like the point of kiddush. The point of kiddush is identical chiyuv should be then maybe that everybody does 50-50. Sometimes a woman makes kiddush, sometimes a man makes kiddush. It's not like that. Okay, that's fine. That's kind of the bottom line. That's like a dotted bottom line. Okay, we know what the halacha is. How do you put it in practice? Everybody sort of finds their own happy place with that. Any questions about kiddush before we move on to benching? Okay, as I said, we're pretending that we can cover like a million topics in 1 hour because I want to show you different perspectives that show up in these different chiyuvim. Because kiddush, women and men are chayav in the exact same way. Benching, though, there's a really interesting question. And in fact, it's very rare that the Gemara asks the question that you want it to ask. Okay? But the Gemara in source number 12 asks the question that you wanted to ask. It says, Amar Ravina L'Rava, Nashim B'Berchat Hamazon, Do'oraita O'Drabanan. Are women chayav in benching Do'oraita O'Drabanan? L'may Nafkamina. What's Nafkamina? Why does it matter if women are chayav in benching Do'oraita O'Drabanan? La'afuke Rabim Yidei Chovatan. Because if they're chayav in benching Do'oraita, then they can be motzi anyone who has a chiyuv Do'oraita. If they're only chayav Drabanan, they can only be motzi people who have a chiyuv Drabanan. So the Gemara actually asks the question we wanted to ask. Okay? What's the bottom line? How does the Shulchan Aruch paskin on women chiyuv in benching? Source number 13. Anybody? He actually leaves it besuffing. Okay? This, for whatever reason, is actually an area where there isn't a totally publicly agreed upon psak, meaning the Shulchan Aruch is the Shulchan Aruch leaves it open. And again, there's lots of sources that talk about why you would go one way or the other. Interesting things to say, but the Shulchan Aruch really interestingly, on the one hand, says, "Hey, it's a suffix whether women are chayav in menching d'oraita or drabanan." But even if they're chayav in menching drabanan, they can actually still be motzi men, in which case.
Men are only obligated to drabanan.
Yeah. When is a man only obligated in menching drabanan? Yeah. When he had a small amount of bread that only obligates him in a drabanan level. Meaning, the chayav in menching d'oraita is v'achalta v'savvata uberachta. You have to eat kidei sova. If you eat less than that, so then you have a chayav in menching drabanan. Okay, we possibly should, in fact, bench in that case. And if you had a situation where you had a woman who had a full chayav in benching, and a man who had a drabanan chayav in benching, the Shulchan Aruch says no problem for a woman to be motzi a man in that case. But we generally seem to have left it as a suffix as to the chiyuv of women in benching. We lean more to the d'oraita side, but there are still some questions. But then we get to the question of zimun. Okay? Now, the question of zimun is a different question than the question of chiyuv in benching. Okay? They're actually two different things, but they obviously overlap. I'm going to tell you a story that I actually just heard, and I was going to mention this before. My grandfather passed away this past Shabbos. So at the Shiva house yesterday, or 2 days ago, I heard my father speaking about my great-grandmother. Okay, my great-grandmother, when she was in her 80s, lived in Ramat Gan, and she had two friends over, and they ate lunch. And after lunch, one of the friends said, "You know, we should bench with a zimun." And my great-grandmother said, "I'm not doing that." And the friend said, "No, it's the halacha. That's, you know, I learned we're supposed to bench with the zimun." And my great-grandmother said, "Halacha shmalacha, I'm in my 80s. I never benched with the zimun before. I'm not starting now." Now, why do I tell that story? Because, first of all, it's an amazing story. And second of all, because it was 100% true for her that she had never benched with the zimun and had no idea why her friend was trying to convince her to start doing this thing. But it's this crazy thing that's actually in the Shulchan Aruch, and in a million different sources. Meaning, the Shulchan Aruch says in source number 14, Nashim mizem no latzman reshut. The Shulchan Aruch says it's a reshut for women to do a zimun for themselves. Aval k'sheochot im ha'nashim chayavot v'yotzot b'zimun shelayim. But when they eat with men, then they're obligated to respond to the zimun of men. Women and men cannot form a zimun together. That's in a whole bunch of sources. And again, there are interesting questions as to why. Can men answer a woman's zimun? Yes, they can. Do they have to leave the room? No, there's like one source that says that. Nobody really knows exactly where he got it from. If you want to, you can. But you can fulfill a mitzvah by responding to a zimun. So that's just like general life advice. Why does the Shulchan Aruch say it's a reshut for women to do zimun? Why doesn't he say that they have to? Okay, now again, I didn't bring you all of the Gemaras. But the Shulchan Aruch chose to say that it was a reshut. The Mishnah Berurah in source number 15 gives an explanation. Why does the Mishnah Berurah say that zimun for women is reshut? You saw the source? Anybody? I have no idea how far you guys got in the sources.
They're scared they won't do it.
The Mishnah Berurah says, Chachamim didn't want to make women do a thing that they didn't think they were going to be able to do because they probably didn't really know how to bench. But the Be'er Halacha in source 16 quotes the Grah, who says that the halacha really should be like the Rush and the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah, who paskin that women are actually chayavot in zimun. And then he says, acha olam lo nahagu kein. But people don't really seem to do this. Okay? The Mishnah Berurah and the Be'er Halacha are both the same person. Yes. We also know him as the Chafetz Chaim. Okay? This is sometimes funny when you see like a contradiction between the Mishnah Berurah and the Be'er Halacha, right? The Mishnah Berurah is melamed zchut on Chazal for saying that women don't have to do zimun. But then in the Be'er Halacha, he says, okay, but actually, like, it really kind of makes sense to say that they would have to, and for whatever reason, that isn't the minhag. Okay, there's also a Tosfot, where Tosfot really struggles to defend the practice of women not doing zimun. He basically says, women don't know how to do zimun, so it can't be that they're obligated and they're just not doing it. It must be that they don't have to do it. And that's really, really interesting because the development of the halacha in terms of women and zimun is very, very clearly related. And this isn't like a crazy modern, postmodern person saying like, oh, you know, women back then, they didn't know anything and now it's totally different, right? Even the sources themselves relate to the fact that at one point, women probably couldn't bench and couldn't be obligated in Zimun, right? But what's the clear implication? If they could, should they? Yes. Now, this is where we get to the halacha shmalacha. I've never done this before, I'm not starting. Yeah, that's a real thing. It's hard for people to do things that they've never done before. But the reason it's so important to learn these sources inside is because it's so easy to get caught in the trap of like, okay, Zima, that's a thing that men do. And like some crazy women who go to Madrasha Lindenbaum, they do Zima. But regular girls, they don't do Zima. Right? And it's not even because people mean anything bad when they say that. Right? You just see the world, you look around, normal people do this, and the crazy girls, they do that. Right? And that's why it's so important to ask yourself, why don't most people do it? Well, apparently, they're being so mech on the minhag of their illiterate foremothers. And sure, if you want to take the tour of, well, they couldn't read, so I don't have to. As a woman, you kind of have to look yourself in the mirror and say, do I really want to continue not doing something because I didn't have to because nobody knew how, right? And the reason to look at these sources inside is to say, oh, that's not a made-up thing. That's a real potential fulfillment of a mitzvah, right? The Mishnah talks about where does this idea of Zimun come from? And it's actually a pasuk, right? Kishem Hashem Ekra Havu Gozel Elokeinu. When I praise God, let's all do it together. There's a mitzvah of doing things bitzavta, in a group, right? And the opportunity to participate in a zimun, and again, for women to participate in a men's zimun is a chiyuv. For men to participate in a woman's zimun, meaning one man eats with a group of three women and they start benching, right? There's plenty of sources that I didn't bring that say, yeah, a man should respond to that zimun because he also gets to participate in the benefit that they get of benching as a group. Because if there is a possibility to do zimun as a group, that is a thing that halakhic human beings would like to do as much as possible. Therefore, everyone should try to do that thing. I don't need to convince you guys, right? You don't need to be convinced that women should do Zimun. That's not really something that you need to deal with. What you do need to be kind of aware of is that that's not just some sort of crazy thing that some people do, but is actually something that would make total sense if we all just said, okay, let's sort of encourage ourselves to do our absolute most within the world of halakha. And that question of doing our absolute most is the last test case, and this one's really my favorite. Because this one's not one specific mitzvah. Any questions about benching, though? I know I threw a lot at you guys. No? Yes?
In benching, aren't there should bracha then apply only to men and not to women?
So the debate about whether benching is doraita or drabanan for women is based on al britcha shechatanta bivsareinu and aras asher natasa lanu. The question of whether women can thank God for the breed that was put into their flesh and the land that was given to them, also potentially the Torah question, those lines are not as relevant to women as they are to men. The question is, does that mean that their benching now is not Doraita because they can't say those words? This is actually the perfect segue. So it's a machloket. You are right. And it's a machloket whether that makes a difference. And that is the segue into the next question, which is, brachot on mitzvot aseh she'azman bracha. As we said, women are p'tura from mitzvot aseh she'azman bracha. Do you know any women who sit in a sukkah? Do you know, like, a lot of women who sit in sukkahs? Yeah? Do you know women who hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Yeah. Women performing mitzvah aseh she'azman bracha is not one of those crazy things that only, you know, certain radical women do. No, it's actually very, very common for at least certain mitzvot. And you might ask, well, you don't have to, so why would you? And even more than that, you might ask, what do you do when you take a lulav? You pick up the lulav, you hold the etrog upside down, and what do you do? Why do you hold the etrog upside down? Because first you have to make the bracha. What bracha do you make when you shake a lulav? Al netilat lulav. Just, you know, pop quiz in case you forgot since look is what the bracha is. You make a bracha, asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al netilat lulav. And this is where we get to a question that is similar to the benching question, and is a continuation of the zimun question. Which is, if you are a woman who says, I want to do the maximum number of mitzvot that I can, What question do you bump into when you take that lulav?
See, the
you have to ask the question of the bracha. And that's the question that's raised in source number 17 in the Or Zeruah. Okay, the Or Zeruah is talking specifically about women and shofar. Okay, that's source number 17. Misaf galel Rabbi Yitzchak bar Asher zatzal alibad Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Shimon im yichol levarich al shofar o al shar mitzvot she'enan mechuyavot. The question is, can women make a bracha on shofar blowing or other mitzvot that they're not chayav? Ichashi bracha, is it considered a bracha ilav or not? Ho'il disharinan luhu litkoa apagab dishvuthu. The fact that we let women blow shofar, there's a sugi that talks about can women blow shofar. Theoretically, are you allowed to play musical instruments on Rosh Hashanah? No, there's actually an isser involved in blowing shofar, unless you're doing it for a mitzvah. We paskin that it's a mitzvah for women as well, so therefore they can blow shofar. Therefore, mashma debitob hemosot. Umikab lo sachar. So it implies that they're doing something good, they get some schar for it. Lahachli nami mevarchot. And therefore, they should also make the bracha. Dilgamre reshidhu lahen lekayim kimola anashim. Because clearly they have permission to fulfill this mitzvah just like men. That's the first option. Oh, Dilma, hi disharina lahu, hi nimishim shvu vitzkiyav Rosh Hashanah, kevan shuhucha lanashim dehafil retzel itkoa kol ayom arashup yadzeu. Nachal pishiyat sekfar. The other option is that maybe when we let women blow shofar, it's because blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah is not really us. Our man wants to blow shofar all day on Rosh Hashanah. He's allowed to if he wants. So, lachi nami benashim eina shvut. So therefore, there's no iser involved with a woman blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Aval heach tivareh hasher kidishanu vitzivanu v'hi lo nitz tavei. But how could she make the bracha of I was commanded if she was not commanded? So that is the best phrasing. That's like a really early phrasing of this problem with the bracha. And the Rambam in source number 18 says very clearly, mitzvot aseh she'anashim p'turo mehem, im ratzu la'asod otan below bracha, in memachin b'yadan. The Rambam says, mitzvot that women are pater from, they're allowed to do, as long as they don't make a bracha. Now, there are some mitzvot aseh she'asman rama that we actually do discourage women from doing in certain contexts. Again, totally different share that requires many more makorot than the one on this source. But the Rambam seems to say most mitzvot aseh she'asman rama, no reason for a woman not to do, but don't make a bracha. Why do you think he says don't make a bracha? Because of vitzivanu. Except look at source number 19. The Rambam actually happens to have, it's mean to say the Rambam has an obsession, but the Rambam has a very deep concern about what's called a bracha she'ena tzricha, or what we refer to colloquially as bracha levatala, but is not exactly the same thing. The Rambam in source number 19 says, we don't make bracha on things that aren't absolute mitzvot. The Rambam says you don't make a bracha when you say halal on Rosh Chodesh. Do you make a bracha when you say halal on Rosh Chodesh? For Ashkenazim, you do. Most Sephardim do not. Now again, within Sephardi minhag, which is not something that I'm an expert in, there are those who follow the Rambam more tightly and those who follow the Rambam less tightly, but it is true that making extra brachot is something that Sephardim paskin heavily against. Rav Avadia Yosef basically tells women, like, don't make brachot on, like, pretty much anything unless you absolutely have to. Because they're very concerned about extra brachot. But the Rambam doesn't say that the problem is the vitzivanu. It's not the language of the bracha. It's the essence of making a bracha itself. The Machzor Vitri. Anybody know when's the Machzor Vitri from? Yeah?
Student of Rashi.
It's written by students of Rashi from the Mesoras of Rashi and his teachers. Okay? The Machzor Vitri quotes, Kein hara Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi, who is pre-Rashi, She'ain, I'm pretty sure, like 90% sure, She'ain moni'in min hanashim levarecha lulav v'sukkah. No reason women can't make a bracha on lulav and sukkah. Deha amrinan b'parakama dekidushin kol mitzvah aseh she'asman grama nashim p'turo. Hey, we already saw this gemara. Women pater mitzvah aseh she'asman grama. Lafukei de'ein al chayav ovein an tricho. Meaning, they're not chayav, they don't have to. Here's the bolded part. You can tell it's important because I bolded it. Aval im chafet so l'havi atzman be'ol ha-mitzvah harishup yada. But if she wants to bring herself under the ol ha-mitzvah, the yoke of the mitzvah, she's allowed to do that. Ve'in mochin la, we don't prevent her. D'lo gara mimi she'eino mitzvah ve'osa. She's no worse than somebody who's not commanded to do a mitzvah and does it. Meaning, there's a whole other category of even men. There are times that men aren't obligated to do mitzvot and they do them. They're also allowed to voluntarily do those mitzvot. Whole different sugya, also very interesting. Umeachar shu dimekayem et mitzvah hi E'afshar b'lo bracha. What does the Masor Vitri say? She's doing a mitzvah. How could she not make a bracha? He takes the flip side, right? He doesn't say, how is she allowed to make the bracha? She says, if you do the mitzvah, you have to make the bracha on the mitzvah. When you do a mitzvah, you make a bracha. That's how it goes. He's not bothered by the language. He says, when you do a mitzvah, you make a bracha. She's allowed to do the mitzvah, make a bracha. Tosfot also relates to this issue. Actually, we're sort of starting to run out of time. Now we're okay. I'll read the Tosfot. Tosfot, this is very important, because Rabbi Nutam here is sort of the source for all Ashkenazi psak on this issue. D'lo mifkidin mifkidna ve'avdina. This is a Gemara in Kiddushin, where Rav Yosef, who was a blind Amora, talks about how we should paskin on whether blind people are chayav in mitzvot. Okay, it's a great sugya, where Rav Yosef says, first I thought that it's great for me if we say blind people are pater for mitzvot, because then I do mitzvot anyway. I get tons of credit. Then he said, then I found out that it's actually better to do mitzvot that you're obligated in. So then I really want to be chayav in mitzvot. Now, Tosfot takes this to teach us something about women. Tosfot says, Mikan midaktik, Rabbeinu Tam, source number 21 on the bottom of page 4. By the way, I've gone through 21 sources, so that's really something. I don't know if you guys are processing all of the information I'm throwing at you guys, but at least you have all the material. So it says, Mikan midaktik Rabbeinu Tam, dinashim v'varchot al mitzvah da seishaz mangrama, afo gab dipturo ligamre, dafil midrabanan lo mechaive. Rabbeinu Tam says, women make brachot al mitzvah da seishaz mangrama, even though they're totally putter, even though, even drabanan, they're not chayav. Okay? Mikom makom yecholohin levarech ve'in kan mishum lo tisat shmel ashav. But they can still make the bracha. We're not concerned at all about a bracha of atala. Mishum mivarcho bracha she'ein atzricha. It's not a bracha she'ein atzricha. De'ilav hachi hechi samach Rav Yosef v'alo mafsi kol bracha kulam. Because if people who aren't chayavim in mitzvot can't make brachot, then Rav Yosef, the blind Amora, would have mentioned that when he was talking about whether he wants to be chayav in mitzvot or not. It's a little bit of a bizarre limud, honestly, because they're really two very different kinds of categories, but still, Rabbeinu Tam says, you do a mitzvah, doesn't matter whether you're technically obligated in that mitzvah, you do a mitzvah, you make a bracha on that. And the best formulation of this, the best formulation of this is the Ran, in source number 22. The Ran says, first, he says, women get schar for doing mitzvah that they're not obligated in. Okay, this is a good thing to know. Famously, the Rambam says this also about women in Talmud Torah, that women get schar for learning Torah, not quite as much as men, but he finds it important to throw out that women get schar. The Ran, he's talking in general. He says, Lemisha eina mitzuva v'osa, nami yesh lo schar. Still gets a reward. Hilkach b'chlal mitzvah hein. Therefore, okay, pay very close attention. Hilkach b'chlal mitzvah hein. Therefore, they are included in the mitzvah, d'mivarchot, and therefore they make the bracha. V'lo neiman, we don't say, ho'il v'lo nitztavu heach yomru v'tzivanu. We don't say they weren't commanded. How can they say we were commanded? D'lo kasha. It's not difficult. D'kevan sheha anashim nitztavu v'af hein nutzlot sachar, shapir yomru v'tzivanu. How does the Ran explain why women can say v'tzivanu in mitzvot? Where does it come from? It's a little bit convoluted, but actually very cool. The Ran says, there is a mitzvah that people are obligated in. Who's obligated in the mitzvah of lulav? Men are obligated in the mitzvah of lulav. But if a woman fulfills the mitzvah of lulav, does she get a reward for it? Yes. And when she performs the mitzvah of lulav, what does she do? Think back to the language that we saw in the Masor Vitri. La'vi'atzma bi'ol ha'mitzvah. She accepts on herself the yoke of the mitzvah. Because why is she doing the mitzvah? Yes! When a woman shakes a lulav, it's for the exact same reason as when a man shakes a lulav. Right? She didn't just say, oh, that looks like a fun plant, let me shake it. Right? That would be completely ridiculous. If a woman is doing a mitzvah for the exact same reason of attempting to be mikhaim, a mitzvah of a kadosh baruch hu, so then there's absolutely no reason that she cannot say, Asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. When a woman says that bracha, what she is saying is, God has sanctified the Jewish people, of which I am a member, and commanded us, the Jewish people, of which I am a member, to fulfill this mitzvah. Now, I was not technically obligated in fulfilling this particular mitzvah, but I am among the group of people who was commanded and who was sanctified, and therefore, when I fulfill this mitzvah to be Mekayim a mitzvah and to do what I believe God wants from me, I should absolutely make this bracha, unless I poskim like the Sfardim, and unless I say that we don't make brachot unless we are absolutely sure that we need to. And that's, again, for a really different reason. That psak of the Sfardim is based on a relationship to brachot and not based on a relationship to the concept of vitzivanu. You can see some of that in there also, but really the reason that Sfardim poskim differently is because of this concern about bracha levatala and not because of a question of whether women are part of the Jewish people, which they are. Yes?
You mentioned that it's all about like the intention of the king of doing the mitzvah for women. What about when some people don't have that kind of intention and they're just like, some want to do it for other reasons? How do you approach that?
I'm going to ask you to be more specific. What are you thinking of? Are you thinking of a specific example? What are you worried about? What's everyone always worried? The crazy, they just want to do it to be like men. What? You can tell I'm like yelling. Everyone's concerned, right? What about those crazy women who want to do mitzvah just to be like the men? I hear this. I hear that. Is there a woman who one time did a mitzvah just because she wanted to be like a man? Probably. Does any woman sit outside in the sukkah only because a man is doing that thing? Right? When she sits in the sukkah, what is she doing? She is fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraita. Is it my responsibility to ask her, why are you doing this thing? Maybe it's just because I'm damakav zchut on people who do mitzvot. But it's inconceivable to me to think that there's anybody who would fulfill a mitzvah d'oraita only for entirely external reasons. Could somebody be inspired to do something because of some kind of external reason? Yeah, I'm sure somebody could. But when we come down to it, when they fulfill that mitzvah, right, they're doing it because they believe that that is a mitzvah that God said to at least somebody to do. And I think, personally, that that's quite enough. I think that that is good enough, and it's not my job to go and ask exactly why are you doing that thing. Could you prove to me that somebody was walking around New York City holding a lulav and esrog because they thought that it was like a really cool flower? I don't know. Yeah, then don't make a bracha. Okay, in that case, don't make a bracha. Find me another good case, maybe I'll find you another one where I'll say don't make a bracha. But in most cases, I think that you should. Yes?
Is there a middle opinion, or could we rationalize, especially for maybe the Sephardic opinion, that maybe instead of either not saying it completely or just saying it because of, or of the rational now, instead we can just maybe tweak it? For instance, let's take lulav. Instead of saying asher tishanu, since that may or may not be a problem, mm-hmm. for the Sfardim, so just take that line out.
But that's not the problem for the Sfardim. The problem is the Shem Hashem, which is why there are cases where, for example, Rav Avadia Yosef would tell women, say that bracha without the Shem Hashem. Okay, there are cases. Some of the Berchot Kriyat Shema, Rav Avadia Yosef Paskin's women could say, but without the Shem Hashem, because he's not concerned about saying the bracha. Here's the thing. We hate changing text, right? Jews, Orthodox Jews, the thing that like lasts for us is that we keep saying the same thing. You go to shul around the world, right? All Ashkenazi shuls say the same thing. Ashkenazim and Sephardim, we still daven like 98% the exact same, right? We don't like changing brachot. Brachot ha-mitzvah are all asher k'dishan mu sotah v'tzivanu. Either we're in or we're out. Shem Hashem, that's a debate that we can have. But if we're going to do it, we're going to say, I, as a woman fulfilling this mitzvah, am part of the klal that was commanded in this mitzvah. Now, last source. Okay, we're pretty much out of time? Yeah, ish. Okay, two more things. Last thing, we should probably mention Chanukah, because it's coming up, and Chanukah is actually one of these really, really great cases for the question of women and mitzvot, because the Gemara explicitly says women are chayavot in mitzvah, in Neru Chanukah, Afin hayuvo tohanis, because they too were included in the miracle. If you have time, read through sources 23, 24, 25. There are three mitzvah seishas mangramas, all drabanans, by the way, that women are chayav in because of Afin hayuvo tohanis, Megillah, Neru Chanukah, and Dalet Kosov. Dalet Kosov people forget about because Pesach is a d'oraita mitzvah, but Dalet Kosov is actually a mitzvah drabanan. and there's a machloket within Rashi and then within Tosfot about what Afin Hayubo Tohanes means. One option is they too were included in whatever was going on at the time, meaning women, slaves in Mitzrayim, they left Mitzrayim, women, Haman was going to kill them, women were persecuted by Antiochus and his guys, so they were included. So when Chazal invented these mitzvot, right, or established these mitzvot, they included women too. Other option, women were the heroines of the story. B'zchut Nashim Tzidkaniot, it was the women who got us out of Mitzrayim. Esther saved us in the time of Esther. And Yehudit was a heroine in the time of Hanukkah. So that's the other option. There's these two options. One is women were there, and one is women were the heroines. Now, within this, there's actually basically a fascinating distinction between the way that we relate to women and mitzvah. One side says, why would we exclude the women? The women were there, right? The women were there when it all happened. They were in the same danger. So if we're Chazal, we're establishing the mitzvah, we're going to say women were there too. So they're chayav in the mitzvah from the beginning. And that would say that there's absolutely no difference between women and men in any of these mitzvah. The other side says, when Chazal established mitzvah aseh shehazman grama, they established it just like d'oraita mitzvah aseh shehazman grama. And really, women would have been excluded. It happens to be in these three cases that there were heroic women who were involved, and therefore, they kind of got them in and said, oh, now you are also obligated. L'halacha, it actually doesn't matter, because we paskin that the chiyuv is the same. But what's interesting here is it actually relates to these sort of two ways of relating to these women in mitzvot question that we're talking about. Are we going to say, we're going to assume everything is the same, there's going to be a few differences, or are we going to say, two totally different beings, two totally different creatures, and they overlap in some places? You can tell that I naturally lean toward the side that says, pretty much the same, with a few differences. Right? And I think that in the 21st century, among people who are growing up in a world where men and women have the same opportunities and the same chances to interact and grow and learn Torah, that I think that it's the right perspective to think about. We're going to assume that everyone wants to fulfill mitzvot to the best of their ability, and everybody who has mitzvot to fulfill is going to try to do them, and we should encourage everybody to fulfill mitzvot to the maximum of their ability. And where there are differences between men and women in those chiyuvei mitzvot, so there are differences between women and men in their chiyuvei mitzvot. The last little excerpt is an excerpt from a much longer article I highly recommend you read. Is by Rabbanit Chana Hankin, who is the founder of Nishmat. And she writes about the interesting opportunity that women have to choose to do mitzvot, and how basically it's actually kind of nice to have the opportunity to choose to do mitzvot, because then when you do them, it has a different coloring of your religious life. Now she basically says we should teach men to look to do that too. She says we as women who get to take on mitzvot and feel like we are creating our religious lives with a little bit more agency, she says we should encourage men to look at halacha that way too. Meaning, there's obligations. But then we should all basically take every opportunity we can to look at the things that we could do, the extra mitzvot that we can do, whether it's a humra to take on or whether it's a different way of participating in a mitzvah. Thinking about men and women and halachic men and halachic women and how they all interact is really just an opportunity for us to ask ourselves, are we maximizing the amount of mitzvot that we can fulfill? And the goal is basically to say, yeah, let's all maximize the amount of mitzvot that everybody around us is able to fulfill. I know I threw a ton at you guys. You've been amazing listeners. Thank you again, Tara, for hosting me. I'm happy to stick around for questions, but I think you have lunch.